You have tuned in to an encore presentation of Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM. Thanks so much for listening. It's Cascadia News Now. I'm Stephanie Contouris with co-hosts Tim Johnson and Dave Willingham back again. Hi, guys.
Glad to be back.
We're glad that you're back, too. Tonight, we've got a lot to talk about. The warrant that wasn't. We're going to talk about Sheriff Elfo's decisions in light of the ACLU. Dave will catch us up on what Washington State legislative bills live and die in Olympia. And we've got a special report on the Erickson Town Hall. But first, I want to make a brief mention about the Sikh man who was shot in Kent on March 4th. Just an update. First of all, that the man is recovering. He has declined news, declined to come out in public, and we are going to honor that, even though maybe some other sources aren't. But people say he is recovering. His family says he's recovering. The FBI has labeled this a likely hate crime. Why are you laughing?
Likely hate crime? I mean, get out of my country, bang. That's a hate crime.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if that's our current FBI or a scared FBI or who the heck knows, not wanting to make any errors. But I wanted to talk about, I believe that there are, it's like something like 50,000 Sikh people in Washington State. And obviously we have a very large Sikh population here who has been harassed. And Satpal Sidhu, who is our county councilman, but he also speaks on behalf of the Sikh community, came out and sent strong messages in support of the people in Kent and people all over Washington State, and also invited people to come to the Sikh temple this past Sunday. And man, the Sikh temple has been a real leader in terms of bridge building and reaching out when I might feel that people who aren't Sikh, I would love to encourage people who aren't Sikh to maybe be proactive about that effort, but that our Sikh community is really upstanding.
Right. And the Sikh community has always been reached out into the larger community. The public is always welcome to come to their services and sit and have a meal with the Sikh community. You're right. It's a very large community. It's a conservative community, actually, and a farming community. And so they have a lot in common with a lot of the rural county people. And Satpal, he makes a very interesting liaison between that community, which, and they're shy. They are shy. Yeah. They're very family oriented. Yeah. They're shy, but they also share a lot of the values with a lot of people that we might consider to be conservative, right wing people out in the county.
And yet there have been numerous interfaith events where they have embraced not just the monotheistic faiths, but at the most recent one that Dave and I went to, that they had pagans there, they had Buddhists there, and that they are really embodying a spirit of let's build bridges and keep hate from happening before it happens. And their featured speaker was Noemi Ban, Holocaust survivor. And I really strongly encourage people to take a moment and reach out, send flowers, something.
Absolutely. And, you know, Noemi, she also spoke recently at Western, and it was a packed house. The room could hold 400, and there was standing room only. She always draws a crowd when she talks about her issues, which are of the same kind, which are, you know, terrible things happen, but we can be better than the terrible things that happen.
Absolutely. So speaking of investigations, let's maybe a limp segue. Let's get into the warrant that wasn't this week. Just a quick recap. It started with a freeway protest. Part of people who, I'm not going to say Bellingham No Dapple, but some people from Bellingham No Dapple group had a rally, and at the rally announced that they people had the option of walking off and blocking part of the freeway or not, as they chose. That was February 11th. On the 16th, the sheriff and Whatcom County served a warrant to Facebook, and the warrant to Facebook was for the Facebook group, Bellingham No Dapple. Just as a quick understanding of this, the people who actually walked up onto the on-ramp and stop the freeway were fewer than 100. The members of the Bellingham Facebook group, Bellingham No Dapple, are about 900. And this is the information that the sheriff was asking for. And so that was on February 16th, ACLU moved to block on the 8th. And then this week, there was supposed to be a trial Tuesday morning. And on Monday, March 13th, Sheriff Elfa withdrew his warrant. And that's where we are today.
Right. And I think there's two aspects to this story. I think number one, the ACLU obviously stepped in and declared that there were several issues of concern with this warrant. But I also think that Facebook corporate had sent a message. I don't know this firsthand, but I saw some news briefs around this that they're not going to participate in these sort of overbroad rummage. I think the ACLU attorney called it rummaging around to try to find things. And so I believe that what happened was the prosecutor and the sheriff understood that they were on uncertain ground with an overbroad warrant that was diffuse and not well-defined, and they've withdrawn it. And that might not be the end of this story. They may resubmit a warrant in the future that is more direct, better articulated, better thought out. They may do that. We're not absolutely sure about this. But I think this was a win for civil liberties. I think it was a win for people's rights because just because you click a button on the internet and have a casual association with some event doesn't mean that you're responsible in any way for anything beyond the action that you did, which was to click a button and say, yeah, this is interesting. Send me more information about it.
And we've seen, overbroad sweeps like this in our history, and we have seen intimidation-oriented fishing expeditions like this in our history. And I really honestly kind of wonder what they were thinking when they made this warrant request, because it was clearly overbroad. It was clearly over the top. And, you know, like you were saying, Jim, you don't forfeit your civil liberties for clicking a button online. You don't. Your right to associate is protected in the Constitution, and I think that this was, meant as kind of a shot across the bow. And I'm glad that they ultimately made the right decision to withdraw it.
Right, and I think the other issue here is that I think that they received maybe more pushback than they expected to receive. You're right. They should have expected to receive pushback. I think they received. I mean, you have the Seattle ACLU coming down on them like a ton of bricks. That's a tough organization to fight against. But there's kind of if I could take it just a little step back, there's a meta story here, which is that, when Donald Trump came to Lyndon back in last spring, there was a tremendous amount of freeway tie-ups, freeway backups, et cetera, et cetera. It's all part of a political process we ought to be proud of in this country, that people come out and they get excited about political things. They have a right to assemble. They have a right to their speech. And I don't see why this particular thing should be prosecuted as aggressively as it is. I think some restraint needs to happen in our society for people that step up and make their voices politically heard.
And to take it just a little bit further, this warrant was almost clearly unnecessary. There are numerous pictures, there are numerous videos showing most, if not all, of the participants. They don't need to go on fishing expeditions if they want to find out who was there. They have plenty of resources that were generated by the people on the freeway themselves.
Right. I mean, I was there, as I've said before, and there were three state troopers at least who were at the scene, one who spent probably 25 minutes just walking around snapping photos of the crowd from every possible angle. So I think you're absolutely right. But I want to follow up on something you said. You talked about it as a shot across the bow, and to me that means that's a test run. So follow up on that. What do you mean a shot across the bow? What other shots might they be wanting to follow that up with, Dave?
Well, it's a form of intimidation by law enforcement to bring the power of the state against people for expressing an opinion, and they don't have to arrest them. They just have to let them know that they're being watched, that we're paying attention. And it's a technique that was really, you know, and this is an extreme example, but in East Germany, it was very common to for the secret police to hire regular citizens to follow someone around for a day and write down everything that they did. And that was important because that person then knew that that was happening. And they told other people that that was happening.
So it was a visible, obvious following around.
Right. And it had a chilling effect on everyone else. If they knew that someone was probably watching them, they were more careful and more, you know, circumspect. And I think that that was part of the intent here, was to make people feel a little uncomfortable, like maybe I shouldn't join this Facebook group because then what's going to happen? What list am I on? Who's watching me?
Well, right. And as several people have pointed out on Facebook and off of it, that people may like or follow a group because they want to stay informed about it. That does not necessarily – it's like retweets do not equal endorsements. And it's the same thing with Facebook. I mean, I follow some conservative Facebook groups because I want to understand what's happening from both sides, and it helps me. So right there, that is a huge issue. But the other issue, going back to what Tim said, I mean, the ACLU was coming forward on violation of First and Fourth Amendment rights. Let me unpack that a little bit. The First Amendment rights – as we know, our freedom of speech, but it's also freedom to participate in political process, which is ironic because that's what the whole incident was about to begin with, right? And Tim, I hadn't heard that Facebook had not complied with the warrant. There's kind of a gap there between the sheriff issuing the warrant to Facebook and ACLU stepping up. And I didn't realize Facebook had not complied.
Well, I don't think I'd characterize it as that. Okay. What they did was they simultaneously – and one assumes that they were reacting to a number of things, perhaps even this, basically sent a message out that they're not going to cooperate with these broad warrants. They're not going to expose their membership to rummaging. I think the ACLU attorney, Doug Honig, called it rummaging around in people's private affairs. And, you know, and this gets back to something that I've said a lot, which is we put up with a lot in this society. We put up with scores of deaths every day in defense of a very liberal interpretation of the Second Amendment. Maybe liberal's not the right word. Very expansive definition.
Broad.
Very broad and expansive definition of the Second Amendment. We need to have a little love for the First Amendment, because when we talk about these institutions we have, the First Amendment, it encompasses a church, our ability to go to church, which is a moral authority in our society. It allows us to freely assemble with people and to ask for redress of grievances with our government. And these are very important. This is why it's Amendment 1 of the Constitution. It may be the most fundamental, important thing that we have inalienable rights to pursue in our society, unlimited, unrestricted rights to pursue, is our ability to get together, talk about things that concern us, have the ability to express ourselves freely, and ask for a redress of these issues.
Absolutely. And going to the Fourth Amendment, I know, Dave, you'll back me up on, help me out on this, but when we often talk about freedom of speech, and it's something that I think maybe we won't talk about as much as the Second Amendment, but we hold dear. I would like to think that we continue to hold dear, especially in Washington State. The Fourth Amendment, though, as I understand it, is using a warrant for specific information with a specific cause. And that was part of what the ACLU said, is that they hadn't established any cause. And what's interesting is, and certainly I saw it and other people documented it, the people who led the protest were very, very careful. They made no announcements ahead of time. People were walking up to them that morning. People were posting on Facebook up until the event was happening. Where are we going? What's happening? They would not say. There is absolutely no evidence that I have seen that leads to a reason to have a warrant, in that anything that could have been posted on that page would have led to this.
Right. And the Fourth Amendment, which essentially controls people being secure in their papers and their personal possessions, papers has been broadly interpreted to mean, you know, basically almost anything that you could do electronically online is somehow, part of your you have a right to privacy. You have a right to be security in those matters. And this has been an issue that's been litigated a lot over the years about, you know, whether the police can pull you over for probable cause and then search everything in your car, whether they have the ability to do that or whether they need to get a warrant to do that. And all of it comes down to this idea of overbroad warrant. You can't – the police just can't go, as you said, Dave, on a fishing expedition.
Right.
They have to have a reasonable goal in mind to do a search of this kind.
Yeah, and over the last decades, the Fourth Amendment is, if not the most, it's in the running for the top of the most eroded right that we have as Americans. You know, that basic protection is constantly being attacked by the U.S. government itself, and I don't mean it in a monolithic entity. I mean people doing their job, trying to do a good job, wind up violating people's Fourth Amendment rights because they find shortcuts or things like that. And, you know, we saw that with the NSA dragnet programs of the Snowden revelations. And it's really so fundamental to the American experience that I think that a lot of people don't really take it quite as seriously as they do. I mean, the First Amendment has clear enumerated things. The founders.
And it's also easy to understand. Like, right. Oh yeah, I have a right to free speech. Like, summed up.
Right, and the Fourth Amendment is very easy to attack. If you know you aren't searching people's cars, what if that serial killer gets through? What if a drug trafficker gets through? There's a lot of really good arguments against upholding people's Fourth Amendment rights. But that is fundamental to what it is to be an American, to be safe and secure from intrusion and search by the government.
Absolutely. So I just want to give a heads up that as this progresses, the possible arrests are still in progress. The Washington State Patrol is moving forward, as news has reported. What I don't understand is if it is the Washington State Patrol that is moving forward on the arrests, why did this warrant come from our sheriff and our county?
That's a very curious question. You know, I don't have the answer to that, but I do think that it has something to do with enforceable jurisdiction. In other words, at the state level, state patrol, you know, reports out back up the chain to state governments. Obviously, and in his statements, the sheriff has said that he's trying to cooperate with state patrol. And it may be, and this is just off the top of my head because I do not know for certain the answer, but the enforceable jurisdiction is Whatcom County.
Interesting. Well, I mean, it bears watching, especially because we don't really have time to go into it, but Elfo has been seen and it's been documented in reports that he has taken photos of Facebook before. And so let's all keep an eye on that. And we are going to move on to some more news right after this. You're listening to CNN Cascadia News Now.
At Resources, we promote sustainable communities and protect the health of Northwestern Washington's people and ecosystems using science, education, advocacy, and action. We have launched a new project called Washington Goes Solar to help homeowners and businesses learn about current incentives for home and business solar arrays. More information is available on this project and others at re-sources.org. On Saturday, March 18th, the League of Women Voters is sponsoring a program at the Bellingham Public Library from 10 to noon on the topic of changing our energy landscape and creating jobs, with keynote speaker Dr. Joel Swisher, Director of the Institute for Energy Studies at Western Washington University.
You are listening to Cascadia News Now. I'm Stephanie Contouris with my co-hosts Tim Johnson and Dave Willingham. And we are a little bit more than halfway through our legislative session for Washington State. And there have been a lot of news stories. There's been some town halls. We're going to talk about that later. But Dave, why don't you just give us a rundown of where we are and what bills still live and die?
Well, the big ones that are no longer with us are, you know, Matt Shea's dream of a new state called Liberty is off for another year. The redefinition of deadly force that would make it easier to challenge cops for use of force cases. Looks like it's gone. We talked about that a couple episodes ago. Death penalty repeal is no longer with us. That's a little lower intensity now that we know Inslee is putting the kibosh in any executions while he is governor, but it would be nice to have that written down somewhere.
Forever, right.
The ability to buy wine by the jug from fancy wineries is gone. I'm not really a wine person, but I look forward to the idea of going to a fancy place and saying,
getting wine in a jug.
Give me your three nicest wines and handing them one jug.
Well, I'm so sorry.
And I
also noticed that rolling back the minimum wage is dead, so that's good.
That's good news. Still Alive is a bill that I'm very happy about. Senate Bill 5272, if you want to look it up, it would allow people convicted of prostitution charges to have those vacated if they can show that they were a victim of sex trafficking. I think that's very important, and I think it's a step towards a more responsible policy. I think that making people who are victims go to court to show that is still a step too far, but we're making some headway. We have a Voting Rights Act, came out of the state Senate. There were two with that title. And to be fair, the Senate Democrats had theirs first, but the Republican one passed, and that would create a path for local municipalities to switch to district-based voting instead of at-large voting, which was subject of big lawsuits recently in Pasco and Yakima, and force them to redo the way they do local elections. Also alive are two individual education plans. The state Democrats in the House and the state Republicans in the Senate both got theirs through. The House Democrats still don't have a plan for how they're going to pay for it. Their $6 billion plan. The Republicans sort of had a plan for how they were going to pay for a lot of theirs, and then it turns out that they did their math wrong, and it's going to cost an extra $1 billion.
Oh, my gosh.
So the plan is, if theirs gets approved, the idea was that they would replace the local levy taxes with a state property tax that would come in and replace that and take that money and spend that on schools. And local municipalities could still have levies, but they weren't to be used for teacher salaries. They were just for, you know, bonus stuff. The plan to pay for most of this $1 billion shortfall in their plan is to, instead of expiring the local taxes right away, well, they'll just keep those for 4 months. So people for 4 months will be paying two education property taxes. And
now, this isn't the one that requires an initiative. That died.
That is the one that requires an initiative.
So this is all a setup for people to say no. I mean, my take on it is.
Right. And the likelihood that any Republican will personally campaign for the thing that they're proposing is extremely remote.
I mean, it was bad enough when it was just an education bill that wasn't stellar. Now it's an education bill that's going to
blow a hole in the budget.
We have a giant deficit and extra taxes for 4 months. And this is just a non-starter. I don't know why we're even there. The both houses did pass a fix for the levy cliff, which means that, you know, I think the odds for us going and basically not passing an education plan and just going on levies for another year and remaining in contempt of court are higher than they were before. I think that's very likely at this point. And
let me just ask a question. So you said that the Democrat plan, which I thought was somehow getting merged anyway, but you said the Democrat plan didn't have a means to pay for it, but didn't it originally? Did it just get amended out?
No, the plan was, we're going to pass it and then we're going to figure out how to pay for it, because I think everyone knows no matter what bill comes out of either the House or the Senate is not what it's going to look like in the end, because they have to come up with something that both like. And so I think that they opted not to go through that fight away.
I think that my perception of what's going on is that everybody who is an adult realizes that revenues are going to have to be raised. If the Democrats propose to raise revenues, it becomes a non-starter on the Republican side because they insist that revenues do not have to be raised.
Because they have to.
Right. And therefore, the whole thing just gets mired in a quagmire because we can't talk about how it's going to be funded because one side of the political spectrum denies the reality that every adult in the room knows, which is that there's the $5 billion shortfall and there's no money for it. And they can talk about waste and rant and rave about it, but somehow or other, some mechanism has to be created to create revenue to fund basic education in Washington.
And, you know, the big thing, the big banner thing for us here in Whatcom County has been some sort of solution to the Hearst decision by the state Supreme Court, which has led to a continuing moratorium here in Whatcom County on any new permit-exempt well development. And we have a plan for that that was passed by the state Senate, and it would essentially just enshrine the old system into law. And there would be some other things. You wouldn't have to mitigate the water you take out of the watershed by putting water directly back in. You could do something else, like some beautification project or something. But it would take us to where we were before, which was not at the point of a water crisis, but we're on our way there.
Right. You know, my analogy for what they did here was they were looking into a well that had no water in it, and now they have painted a big sign that says plenty of water here and stuck it on the well. So that's what they did. They did not actually create water. They did not actually solve any problem. They just said it's not a problem.
They might have solved a problem in the eyes of the people who believe that they have a right to develop land that they thought that they had a right to or that they paid for. I mean, I'm not in the position to defend using water that we haven't allocated or that we haven't planned for. But I do think that the people who end up getting hurt in this are people who legitimately bought some land and thought that they could.
Well, that is true. And you know, the Supreme Court's mandate to the county was that the county needs to step up and become responsible for these issues. And the county, I can't quite figure out why, but the county has this huge allergy to being responsible for this. They're completely responsible on the permitting side. I mean, they're perfectly happy to hand out development permits and be responsible and to assert their right to do that. I don't understand why they are so shy about trying to integrate that mechanism of issuing a development permit with an understanding of where water is available and a permit can be issued.
Might it impact electability in the future? I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, that's part of the thing is that we need to be taking care of our fundamental water supply. We do not have an infinite supply of water, even though sometimes it feels that way here in the Pacific Northwest. And we should be managing our water system. And frankly, we should totally reform the way we allocate water in Washington State because it's no longer serves our purpose. But in the meanwhile, we should be doing the work. We should be doing the hydrogeological assessments. We should know where the water is and where how much we have. And just saying just do what you want is the exact wrong thing. And that's exactly what the Senate bill thing. It totally removes any requirement for any review of the impact on the local watershed. And I think it's probably not going to go anywhere, but I'm a little concerned, like you mentioned, about the state House members looking at their next election and thinking, what's this going to mean to me?
And you are listening to Cascadia News Now. You are tuned in to KMRE 102.3 FM, Bellingham, and KMRE.org for our online listeners. I'm Stephanie Contouris with Tim Johnson and Dave Willingham, and this is Cascadia News Now. I think we're talking about legislative issues and what lives and dies, and I feel like there's a similarity with the education issue and with the water issue. In that, as with many issues, it's a struggle of what's going to work right now versus thinking about the long term. And man, I hate to say it, Tim, it kind of also ties into the jail issue. I mean, we were debating whether or not we were going to bring up the Whatcom County Jail, but it seems like there's been a lot of stave things off in the future and deal with them later and just try to get through what's now. And I just feel like for us as a county, that doesn't seem to work.
Yeah, I guess the way I would characterize this is you imagine our two tracks on a railroad, and they're both moving along, and they seem like they're going the same direction, but there's never any there's no mechanism to integrate some of these issues. So, for example, there's been a very robust and admirable, I think that we need to give it a lot of credit, admirable effort to look at incarceration reduction programs and jail alternatives and mental health counseling, and that's very robust.
So that would be – that you mean by that, like, obviously just an alternative to putting people in jail.
Exactly. And you would think that that would have an influence on the jail planning side of the equation because if you are actually planning to have fewer people in jail, maybe you don't need as big of a jail as you had. But I can guarantee you that those conversations are not – moving along. They're not going to intersect at any point. And the county, I attended a meeting recently where it was explained by the county's deputy administrator that a proposal to put an initiative on the ballot for November is going to move forward, but it apparently is not going to be influenced in any way by the discussion that's been going on for a year about incarceration alternatives.
So let's recap the players in this conversation. So we have Mayor Linville, and we have County Executive Jack Laus, and once again, Bill Elfo is often attending and very vocal about the jail situation. And you were just saying the deputy administrator.
Right. And, you know, the prosecutor is silent but very much a force in this. And the other players on this are also – obviously they're going to be the small cities and their administrations and their councils and the City of Bellingham City Council and Whatcom County Council. And out of this whole group that we've named, it's all going to come down to the county council – as to whether or not they want to put a measure on the ballot for November. And I can't guarantee how that's going to go, but I can tell you that from City of Bellingham standpoint, if it's not a substantially rethought proposal to them about what the city is responsible for paying, they're not going to approve it again. It will be the same thing again, which it was. Mm. It will go to the ballot without the City of Bellingham's participation in it. Now, my own sense, counting up the votes on the county council side, just as a mental exercise, Looking at the people that are up there, if the City of Bellingham is not on board again, I don't think the county council is going to go for it.
No, and I totally agree. And two separate tracks, never the twain shall meet analogy was perfect because, you know, not only that, but we also have this commission set up whose job it is to determine how we're going to pay for the jail. And they don't have guidance yet on what size the jail is going to be. And they're determining how to pay for it. And that just is so absurd to me. And they've already decided we're not going to consider anything other than the exact same sales tax increase that we had last time that was on the ballot. And it really feels like they're just determined to replay last time when it failed.
Well, so you're saying that they are going to probably put an initiative on the November ballot that asks us to fund a jail for which the parameters have not been set.
I would say that's true. And the way I would characterize this is there is a public safety sales tax that the state legislature provided for counties. It was tapped into partially a few years ago when we did a jail initiative. It was tapped into. There's still some of this money out there left to be tapped into. And I believe, and this is just me, but I believe that the administration wants to tap into the remainder of that amount of money, regardless of what the planning is, regardless of whether there are jail alternatives or what the size of the jail is. They want to exhaust that fund and have all of it permanently in county budgeting proposal. And I understand that. Actually, I do understand that from an administrative standpoint, which means that we've completely tapped out that well. We've tapped out that reserve to its maximum. And all the money that is available is now ours to spend as we wish down the road. But I think it's a big ask to the taxpayers to put that forward, to make that big ask without a plan.
And some cities.
And some cities.
Yeah, and people in the legislature and people who follow the legislature will always complain about unfunded mandates because there's, you know, the legislature passes some rule, but they don't bother paying for it or its enforcement.
And here we are.
And this feels like the opposite. They're asking for a bunch of money that's still kind of amorphous, what's going to happen with it. And I really am discouraged at the progress that they've made so far. I'd hoped that after last time when it failed so narrowly, they'd really sit back and think, why did this happen and how can we make this happen? Because Whatcom County needs a new jail.
Yeah. I mean, we all agree. Hopefully, we all agree on that. So we were talking about the players, and it's interesting to me. There have been some planning meetings. There's been very little news other than you, Tim. There's been very little news about it. One of the, I don't know if we can say players, but one of the voices we tend to hear are the people who are anti-major jail expansion. I am thinking about the Restorative Community Coalition and several local voices that have been very adamant before. It worries me that it seems like these discussions are kind of happening outside of the public eye.
Well, I wouldn't say that they're happening outside the public eye in the sense that, you know, I attended a meeting recently, and anybody, a member of the public, can talk about the incarceration, go to the alternative incarceration alternative meetings. Those have been great. And the judges have been there, and the prosecutors have been there, and the social people, the, you know, mental health professionals, people working in issues of homelessness. It's actually a very excellent coalition that's been doing great work. You know, the mayor of Bellingham, she gets roped into a lot of this, but, you know, she's as skeptical about this as any person. And she said, you know, there's a couple of players, and I'm not going to name who they are, but there's a couple of players on there that really are recalcitrant about moving forward on this issue. And they are major, major, and you've named them, players in this stage play. So there, as far as the alternative and the incarceration alternative, there's a lot going on there. What hasn't happened at all, and you know, I talked to Ken Mann on the county council. He's the liaison going forward on this. He hasn't heard anything from the administration about the jail proposal. So my guess is that based upon what the county deputy said, is this is going to be sprung really fast on county council.
Well, we'll be paying attention, and thank you so much, both of you guys, for just bringing it up and making sure that we know about it at all. We'll talk about it more. We do want to move to talking about some town halls. We've been talking about a lot of legislative issues, and I will say Chris Litton and Kevin Ranker have been very proud of the work, at least so far, in terms of education. And we're going to talk about them coming up, but we did miss covering a big town hall that happened on March 4th. You may have heard about it. Our often absent Doug Erickson was there. And we have a lovely special report from Liz Darrow, and she was at the meeting. So take it away, Liz.
Senator Doug Erickson held a town hall meeting at Meridian High School in Whatcom County on Saturday, March 4th. The town hall came just 2 days after a hearing to determine whether Erickson should be recalled from his position as senator of the 42nd Legislative District for failing to do his job. Constituents began the recall process following Erickson's acceptance of a position with the EPA in Washington, D.C. The recall was denied by a Whatcom Superior Court judge, citing lack of sufficient grounds. Hundreds of constituents packed the auditorium at Meridian High School for a chance to hear from the senator, while an estimated 150 more waited outside. Erickson began the town hall by going over some ground rules.
And the most important rule is that we treat everybody here with respect. And that's the most important thing, that everybody gets a chance to ask a question, have their say. If you want to boo somebody, boo me. Don't boo the person asking the question or applaud to the person asking the question.
All right, boo!
So we can come together as a community and have a conversation about what's the best interest of Washington State, talk about the issues that we care about, and really say what are the solutions that we need to be focused in here in Washington. So that's the reason for those rules, is to treat each other with respect.
Moments after insisting that respect and hearing all viewpoints are critical to a successful town hall, Erickson shut down several questions about his failure to do his job and flat out refused to address other questions that were asked.
I was offered a temporary position with the Trump administration at the EPA. And before I took that position, I spoke with legal counsel in the Washington State Senate and with outside legal counsel with regards to that particular provision of the Constitution that you bring up. Legal counsel within the Senate told me that the way that has been interpreted by our U.S., by the Washington State Supreme Court, that I was not in violation of that by taking a temporary position with the EPA. Many people have multiple jobs who are in the legislature. And people can tell you, you know what, I can handle two jobs. My wife can do eight jobs at once. And so this is not, you know, unheard of for people to be
doing. Why do you make your wife do eight jobs?
Thank you very much. Now, to date, in Olympia, I have missed 10 votes on the Senate floor. So if you go look at the vote miscount totals, you'll find that at the top of the list is Senator Reuven Carlisle from Seattle with 24, Senator David Frock with 24, Senator Kevin Ranker, who's also here in Whatcom County, has missed 15 votes.
I did go look at the votes that the senator has missed, which total 11 as of today's broadcast. Of interest among them were a bill which allows the Department of Natural Resources to directly transfer land to a current home site lessee, a bill concerning wastewater treatment plant certification, and a bill which removes expiration dates for the Department of Natural Resources harvesting program, all of which seem incredibly relevant to the chairman of the Senate Energy, Environment, and Telecommunications Committee. Meanwhile, back at the town hall meeting, the senator was asked several questions about the environment and about his alignment with the Trump administration on climate change denial.
But just to go back, when you throw those numbers out, you have to take a long, hard look at who's producing those numbers, what it actually means, and yes, there are times when new evidence comes forward, when people make new discoveries. You know, I think it's always funny when people say the science is decided, every single time they have been wrong, going back in history.
My question, Senator, is why you invited a man named Tony Heller, a man who has no expertise in climate, a man who does not understand the difference between weather and climate, why you invited him to testify before your committee on climate.
The one in particular here I thought was very interesting, it was very timely, we had Mr. Heller actually come to the committee and speak, was during the days before, there was at the NOAA administration, there was a whistleblower who came out talking about data with regards to what's coming forward, because I agree with you, there's a big difference between climate and weather. I think we're in complete agreement about that. But talking about the data has been perhaps altered or manipulated to meet some of the goals. And this person.
Rubbish!
If you take a look at the articles in the newspapers leading up to it, this was a very big story. This person came forward, and he was talking about the data. So what Tony Heller was providing, and he is a scientist. He is very well trained in these areas. He's worked on it quite a bit. And he brought a different viewpoint forward with what's going on with the data. So that's why we brought him in. And I think it's important to look at those things. You can take a look at the data and say there's definitely a difference of opinion with regards to how the data was utilized and manipulated.
Science, not opinion.
If you go back and actually watch the hearing, you'll find that he provided some very interesting information. If you look at what's actually happening at NOAA right now, the people who are coming forward talking about the data, it's very interesting. I think it's things that people should be made aware of. I think that our high school students should be made aware of. I think everybody.
The teacher controversy, right?
And speaking of high school students, if there had been an audience participation award at the town hall meeting, it would have gone to high school junior Emma Ritchie, who articulately asked the senator why he has refused to meet with her teen council group for 3 years in a row at Lobby Day in Olympia.
That means each year over MLK weekend, the Mount Baker Teen Council travels to Olympia to participate in our National Teen Lobby Day. For the past 3 years, you have either refused to meet with those of us in the 42nd District or simply made no effort to acknowledge that we are even there. This includes having us meet with Sandy over there and shirking the responsibility of being face-to-face with the most vulnerable members of your community, LGBT students, students of color, students with disabilities, etc. Dismissing our visit there in the Capitol altogether. It is your job as Senator of the 42nd District here in Washington State to hear and to represent all of the folks in your community. As we have become a notable presence in Bellingham's education system, it is our right to be treated and with respect and dignity, just like any other constituent. So my question is, why have you neglected to meet with us, a group of informed and politically minded youth spreading important comprehensive education for the past 3 years?
In the program, you think it's important to you at the high school level. I think that's great that you're active in the system. So, just let everybody know, when you go to Olympia to visit with your representatives, sometimes we're available and sometimes we're not. We're working a lot.
Liar!
Not when you're in D.C.
Despite the audience's clear dissatisfaction with his answers and his masterful sidestepping of more than half of the questions asked, Senator Erickson finished the town hall meeting by congratulating himself on a job well done.
I just want to say, I know there was disagreement. I know there was a little bit of booing here and there. But we did it much better in Whatcom County than most other communities do this, I just want to say.
And that, perhaps more than anything, is evidence that Senator Erickson is only interested in listening to the percentage of his constituents who agree with him and will applaud him no matter what he says. For Cascadia News Now, I'm Liz Darrow.
You're listening to Cascadia News Now. I'm Stephanie Contouris with Tim Johnson and Dave Willingham. And that report was prepared by our correspondent, Liz Darrow, who attended, as you could hear, the Doug Erickson March 4th Town Hall. He was very self-congratulatory at the end of it. And one of the things he said is, when you go to Olympia, sometimes we're available, sometimes we're not. And that's the reason he hasn't been around, apparently.
You know, I want to take just a second to give Doug a little credit.
All right.
Because I think that he handled himself. He was kind of slippery in answering questions, but he did stand and deliver. He asked the audience to direct their ire at him and not each other and to try to make a civil forum. I think he walked in knowing he'd receive some heat. I think he showed some poise in the reception of that heat, and I think he tried very hard to have that heat directed against him. So I think he deserves a little credit for that.
Well, and be that as it may, he certainly did have a town hall when some people aren't.
Correct.
For sure.
Correct.
But, and at the same time, he, as is the wont of many politicians, dodged several questions
right.
over and over again.
So. You know, it's these town halls are an interesting beast. They sort of came into flower around, in the midterm elections after Obama was elected. The Tea Party stepped up, and these were very valuable forums for the Republican side of the equation because they were in the minority and people could stand up and shout and get very mad about the way things are. But when you're in power, when you're the majority power, you're actually responsible mm-hmm. for that. And so at these town hall meetings, the party in charge is getting a lot of heat. And they're getting a lot of heat because they're the party in charge.
Yeah, I want to echo what you said, Tim. This was an opportunity for a number of people who went to vent some of their frustration, not necessarily with Erickson, but with the administration in D.C. And I think that they took it. And I think that it was good of Doug to stand there and give them that venue. But, as to his legislators are busy thing, I got blown off by Doug a lot going down to Olympia. But, Vincent Bies always made time for me, even when we both knew he didn't want to have the conversation. So, yeah.
Well, let me just join this little Republican representative love fest. And I will say that I just wrote to Vincent Bies's office the other day and got a very quick response. And love or hate his policies, that is what I hope for in any representative. And yes, maybe some of the ire was expressed at the party and some of the issues of the party. But I think some of it's very clearly expressed at Doug, who is our employee of a sort and has absconded to another job and has missed. He claimed he only missed 9 or 10 votes, but it was really more like 19. And
some of those votes were held for him, and so other things were the clock was running. And
we're paying the man, and I don't care. Right. He says some people can work 8 jobs, maybe not these two of 8 jobs.
Right.
And missing hearings for your own bills is kind of to me, especially a crime, because filing those bills isn't free.
Right.
That costs the taxpayer a considerable amount once you go through all of the hearings and all of that. And at least show up for your thing. And when you invite somebody to speak, show up for that.
Yeah. And, you know, you'd mentioned Vincent Bison. This has always been my position about him. He actually may be the very perfect representative of the 42nd District, of who they are, what their values are. He's always polite.
Yep.
He reaches across the aisle to get things done that are important for the district. He works with Chris Litton on occasion, not always. He's a Republican, but he reaches across the aisle to do things. And I think, you know, he's an example, I think, of the sort of cordiality that we could use more of in Olympia.
I mean, he's certainly not the moderate that Kelly Linville or Dale Bramlin were, who is my ultimate, like somebody who can be a true moderate and represent as best as possible both sides, or at least hear people. But if you're going to have super conservatives, yeah, I agree with you. Meanwhile, one thing I wanted to point out about Doug Erickson, Dave, you talked about his prevent, this is bringing us full circle, preventing economic disruptions, protesters shouldn't protest bill that died, thankfully, a merciful death. But he did make this comparison, which just irked me, of preventing protesters, comparing that to allowing women into abortion clinics. And I'm like, okay, dude, come on. That's beyond the pale. And that's the thing about Erickson that has always bugged me, is just a sort of non-dignified way of advancing his agenda.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, it's like tapping the patella on your knee for a reflex action. He knows how to throw red meat to the crowd. You know, sometimes the crowd doesn't need red meat. Sometimes they need effective representation, effective legislation. Maybe they don't really need to be angered in order for them to vote and to feel like they're being represented in Olympia.
Yeah. And, you know, I kind of have a grudging respect for that, because I see that as like, if I were going to reboot the old show Crossfire, he would be at the top of my list for someone, because he knows how to goad people, he knows how to turn a phrase, and he really is good at figuring out what it is to say that's going to be like the most jarring.
He's glib.
Yeah, it's tremendous. It's really impressive from if he wasn't my representative, I'd appreciate it a lot more, but here we are.
He probably has a future career on Fox News. Well, I think you're talking about a release valve of town halls, and that's great. And yay that there's a release valve. But to me, what's effective is listening to your constituents and then letting that impact your future. And I don't have a lot of hope that anything anybody said is going to impact anything that that Senator Erickson does. I might have more hope for the upcoming town halls with Chris Litton and Kevin Renker. And one could certainly argue that they are just as firmly in the progressive side as Doug Erickson is on the conservative side.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm glad that we're going to give a little plug for these upcoming events.
Yep.
And I think people should attend those. They're probably not going to be the format is probably not going to allow people to shout their irritation as much. But these are the nationally, the Democrats are in the minority. They're not in charge. But I know from Kevin Ranker's standpoint, he just wants to send a message of hope to his constituents. I think Chris Litton wants to do the same thing. These are going to be probably more listening events than they are town halls, although I'm absolutely positive that they will take questions and they will also be available to talk to their constituents afterwards. And I'm glad we're given a plug for that too, because you're right. These town halls, they do serve a function. And some of them are just bloodletting events, and some of them are learning exercises. And people, I think, do need to know in their political system, they need to learn how to engage with their political system and how to move forward. And our representatives are going to be available in Bellingham, and we should go see them.
Yeah, people who keep talking about resist and people who keep talking about rise up, there's a lot of ways to do that, but one of the most fundamental and one of the most important ways to do that is as a citizen, as connecting with people who represent you or who don't represent you well. So I guess that's what I'm saying. I think the proof is in the pudding with town halls. I would like to see an end result of our representatives listening and maybe reflecting in their future votes and bills. But you talked about Kevin Ranker's town hall, and you talked about it being a presentation, and he had a trial run, which was much more than a trial run, very successful in Orcas, and had a presentation. And it was really an atypical, here I am, dope to dope, here's my agenda. He was really talking about how citizens can take action.
Correct.
It was almost an activist training. And it was all about hope and change and really connecting. And lest we forget, we're talking about the district that is the most progressive and probably one of the most activist districts in our state. So he was reaching out to people who were charged up and absolutely wanting to do something. And he spent a good half hour to an hour taking questions and having pretty deep conversations with people.
I would characterize him as almost the anti-Erickson because very little of what he does is cynically motivated. I don't think he's cynically motivated. He doesn't have the snappy answer to the question. He is effusive in his beliefs. He's passionate about his beliefs. It's not a calculation for him. He's an interesting person.
Yeah, and even when he and I have had disagreements and perhaps I have been a little unfair, he has always been thoughtful. He has respected me, and he's even if I don't like his answer, it is genuine and heartfelt. At least that's how it comes across to me.
So go hear him for free and his presentation. And this is just in Bellingham. He will be presenting with LEMI Chairman Tim Ballew. And that is Saturday, March 19th. And Susan Delbeny also, she's going to be a week away, Saturday, March 25th. Kevin Ranker is going to be at the Mount Baker Theater. And Susan Delbeny will be Saturday, March 25th at the Pioneer Pavilion Community Center in Ferndale. She's also having an upcoming meeting later on in Mount Vernon. Please go and attend and listen. And we're just down to our last couple minutes. We want to give a shout out to our new planning committee members for our City of Bellingham Planning Committee, Mike Estes and Irene Mott Gibson. And they are some pretty amazing people in our community. Dave, you have had Mike on your show that's going to be debuting soon, American Carnage Report. Tell us a little bit about Mike.
Mike is he's been around quite a bit. He's been the chair of the Whatcom Democrats. He was part of the Redistricting Commission. He's an intelligent, thoughtful guy, and I think that the Planning Commission will be better for having him.
Yeah, I see this as a restructuring a bit of Planning Commission directives away from development to more community building. And I think both of them are excellent choices, and I think it was a very wise move to move the city that way, given the challenges that the City of Bellingham is facing in the future.
So hat tip to Mike Estes and Iris Mott Gibson, and we're going to be talking about planning, the Planning Commission, and our new upcoming homeless shelter next time on Cascadia News. But that is pretty much all the time we have tonight. I want to thank my co-hosts, as always, the amazing Tim Johnson and the amazing Dave Willingham. Thanks so much for... Man, that was a lot of information. And special thanks to our engineers, Robert Clark, and our assistant engineer, Diana Powell, tonight. We really, really appreciate you doing all you can to help us sound as good as we can. This show, Cascadia News Now, is produced by me, Stephanie Contouris, and our technical director is Dave Willingham. You are listening to us on KMRE 102.3 FM Bellingham, your community, your voice, your station.